The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are so wrong.
You're so wonderful.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Someone intelligent on radio. Yay!
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, we've got some of our listener surveys in. We found that there are more radios tuned to this program, The Doctor Is In, than any other kitchen appliance. More than a microwave, more than a blender, more than a refrigerator freezer side by side with the ice maker. So that's neat to know. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is our Friday version. Look back Friday. It's fascinating because every so often somebody will come up to me at a conference and they'll say something akin to, yeah, I sure like that that look ahead backwards that you do. Or, yeah, I was listening the other day to your listen back calls. Friday you had somebody there and it was taking a look back call for you. And here I thought when I called it Look Back Friday, it would be so easy to remember. And by the way, talk about being humbled. Had a lady come up to me in a conference, this was some years back. And she said, I just love your show. I listen to you every day. And I had not been on the air in her town for approximately 2 months. Now, I realized at the time maybe she was listening another way. Sirius Channel 130 or web streaming or something along those lines. And as I'm finding out, more and more people are listening in alternative venues. But I think she was alluding to the local radio affiliate. I think. And I felt really bad because it was my aunt. She should have known better. All right, we got one, two, we got several calls up there. We will get to those after my opening monologue. Have you ever wondered why sometimes psychologist types or medical people who venture into the psychiatric world or folks that are in mental health counseling types come up with ideas and theories that you think, that just doesn't seem to square with reality. I mean, why would they say this? I had not heard that before, but it just, I don't know. It seems a bit of a stretch. Have you ever heard the phrase, follow the money? I think there's a parallel phrase that works maybe even more so. Follow the ego. If we assume that mental health folks, people who are trained, people who have letters after their names, are supposed to be more in touch, more in tune, smarter, if you will, than the average bear, the average parent, the average person, then they should see human conduct through a different lens. A more critical lens, a more sophisticated lens. And they should be able to come up with theories and ideas and different types of intervention and notions that, well, would set them apart. Let me give you a small example. This was a while back. I'm walking through a grocery store. Saw one of your basic women's family magazines. The headline caught my eye. A noted child psychiatrist tells why timeout is awful for children. Ooh, all right. You know, given that all kinds of parents use some form of timeout, opened it up. First paragraph. Timeout is a humiliating experience. Timeout is isolation. Timeout is rejection of the child. Now, those of you who are loving parents, which I'm going to pretty much assume everybody listening to this program is, you probably use some form of that. You set the kid down on the steps, or you stand him in a corner, you sit him on a couch, or you put him in his room, all of which are variants of separating the kid from the situation, supposedly making him bored, supposedly saying, okay, this is where you go calm yourself down, however you choose to use it. And it never occurred to you that you were really rejecting the child, that you were humiliating your four-year-old or whatever age you use it. Never occurred to you. But you're thinking, well, gosh, this person's supposed to be really smart. They're a professional. I'm just like a lay parent. They are professional type parent, even if they don't have any kids. Where are they coming with this? Well, I got a theory. Follow the ego. If I'm supposed to be the professional, then I'm supposed to know more than you. I'm supposed to have insight that you don't have. I'm supposed to understand at a deeper level what makes human beings and children being human beings, well, some of the time, what makes them tick. Therefore, if I come up with an idea or a notion like timeout is a humiliating experience, it makes you a little nervous, doesn't it? Why? Well, because I'm the professional. I'm the one who's supposed to know. I've noticed there's a stretch. I call it the psychological stretch. That is, I reach too far for sophistication and insight that you don't have. You're not trained like I am. So you don't have that. And I have to show that I do. So I may come up with ideas and theories and observations that strike you as weird. Timeout is a humiliating experience. Huh? Especially for those of you who have kids who go over there and sing, or who go over there and just kind of talk to themselves or have fun over there, or nag you to death from over there. You're thinking, I don't know, I'm not noticing any humiliation. What am I missing here? But admit it, you may be tempted to think, well, I don't know, that person is an expert. The stretch. Reaching for the insight. Reaching for the theory that separates the professional from the lay parent. It's tempting. It's ego. If I offer advice to a parent, or if I offer someone advice about their life, I want that guidance to fit within their overall reality of things so that it isn't something they have to swallow hard to accept, that it just is diametrically opposed or at least perpendicularly opposed to the way they look at life or the way they look at raising kids. Now, because of that, some people will say, well, that's just common sense. You know, the implication is, well, aren't you a professional? Don't you have a lot of letters after your name or something like that? Didn't you go to school for 29 years? That's all you can come up with? Well, yeah. Yeah, it is sometimes all I want to come up with. Because I want what works here. I don't want what makes me sound smart. I wrote a book called Advice Worth Ignoring. In the book are 50 different notions and theories and ideas that now dominate the parenting landscape. And each one of them may look good on paper, but in real life, they don't work so well. And they confuse parents, and they undercut parents, and they corrode parents' authority. but they sound smart. They are all examples of a psychological stretch, which is, hey, I'm going to tell you a better way to do it because I'm a professional. I'm an expert. I'm highly trained. Follow the ego. I remember one time I was doing evaluations for the local county juvenile court system. I was asked by the director of the multi-county attention facility, Ray, we want stuff in the reports that we can use. We don't want a whole lot of psychological babble. We just need recommendations in clear-cut, easy, understandable language. And I said, Tony, I got you. That makes sense to me. That's my style. That would work just fine with me. So we did this, six, 8 months worth. At one point, it got back to me that the same folks who asked for level-headed, easy-to-understand, practical suggestions were saying, well, I don't know, we kind of wish we had a little more, like, intricate look, psychologically speaking, into the child's brain, into how they function. You see, even they, who originally asked for common sense, said, well, you know, you're supposed to be the professional. Give us some good psychological stuff. And I remember thinking, the good psychological stuff isn't going to make any difference to you because you only have so many options. I can explain all kinds of things about how this kid ticks. It's not going to help you. The psychological stretch. It explains an awful lot of why so many theories that the experts come up with don't seem to make any sense and crash into the face of reality. All right. Well, let's do it this way. On the programs, when folks call in, one of my rules is if you disagree with me, you go straight to the head of the line. On this particular look back call, Joe from Michigan disagrees with me. So we're going to find out what it is he disagrees with and see if I can agree with it. I'm Dr. Ray. I have told you this today, and I've been telling you that you are not going to ruin my day.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Catherine Hadro.
Every week, I get together with a team of pro-life experts to shine the light of truth on abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the culture of death. We'll help to inform you so you can become engaged in the pro-life movement. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. More than a show, a call to action.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly with Catherine Hadro, Sunday morning at 10:30 on EWTN Radio.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
How do I handle difficult family members? When do I correct others? When do I hold my tongue? Too often, we're late in realizing that we mishandle a situation, causing both resentment and frustration. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray, and in my new book, Thinking Like Jesus, I tackle these questions and more. Check it out and more of my books at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Dr. Ray, I would not ever disagree with you because you're so smart. You have a lot of answers to a lot of things.
doing the show without the benefit of a teleprompter, thinking at pretty close to the speed of thought. Have you seen where they measure how fast neurological charges occur? How fast they move? They do move pretty good. I mean, they don't obviously move at the speed of light, but they can chug pretty quickly through your brain, down into your limbs, places like that. 20, 30, 40 miles an hour, maybe. That's pretty fast. Okay, let's see what we got here. I got to go to Joe, Michigan, on this Look Back Friday. He disagrees with me, so we're going to, I think, jump straight into this call.
Okay, well, starting out, and mind you, I was dialing before you were done, and you started to a little bit walk back, but you said...
All right, stop right there. Joe, stop right there. I'm going to interrupt you. You tell me what you just did.
Start to answer your question, and then got interrupted.
No, wait a minute. You started dialing before you heard the rest of it. You heard something you didn't like, and you immediately said, well, I don't like that. Remember? Okay, just a thought. All right, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay, you're right. But I heard enough to have the impression that what you communicated could clearly come across that when a parent or a person is calling, talking about their concern about someone's behavior, that they are talking ill of their kid. You said people do their qualifying and their caveats of he's a good kid, she's a good kid. And you said you think one of the first reasons why they do that, you gave three, one of the first reasons why they do that is because they don't want to be talking bad about their kid or ill of their kid. And you said, you are talking ill of your kid. And that just, I said, whoa. That's
well, it is.
Contrary to...
Wait, it is. Wait, Joe.
Contrary. I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. Don't interpret ill to mean a put down. If I say Ray Guarendi lies a lot, is that a positive statement about Ray Guarendi? It could be a realistic statement. Is that ill?
It's speaking about his behavior, not his person.
And I said, you are speaking ill of your child. That's what I said.
Yes, but a child is much more than a child's behavior.
Okay, but I said speaking. You are speaking ill of your child. In other words, your child punches his sister. Yes, I'm speaking ill of that.
Speaking ill of the child's behavior. I don't have anywhere near the education you have in mental health, but most of the mental health material that I've dealt with, and second to this issue, was most of my understanding of the Catholic Church regarding the difference between the behavior of the sin and the person doing the sin. But
you're going to get cut off, Joe. You're going to get cut off because the music is done. Thank you for the call. That was a faux break. That's the one confusing thing about Look Back Friday, besides the things that I say, is sometimes these calls, these previous calls, bump into a break. And in rerunning them, we take the break into account, but we don't have another break coming up for maybe another 5 minutes or 6 minutes. So I do want to deal with this. Joe's problem was this, philosophically speaking. Goes back to a phrase that parents say to kids a lot. I like you, I don't like your behavior. I love you, I don't like what you did. The idea that, and this is what Joe was getting at, when I said you're speaking ill of your child, he heard that as saying, you're speaking ill of the child as a person. In other words, somehow you are devaluing the whole child. Okay, I'm going to acknowledge that you could hear it that way. Certainly not the way I intended it. And I could have been particularly specific and said, you are speaking ill of your child's behavior. So I think that bothered Joe. And I think he was cut off by the break, but he was getting ready to say that the church always talks about, in its various ways, love the sinner, hate the sin. And he heard me putting down the child and not child's sin. That's what he heard. Which brings up an interesting point, and let's broaden this out. When people get into arguments, oftentimes the argument gets ugly. And it gets ugly because someone misinterprets what a person said. Let me give you an example. Let's say that a husband comes home late. And the wife says, you need to call me. You need to call. I need to know you're going to be late. Husband says, I know, I've called you before, but I thought you would have known. Oh, so you're saying that I'm too dumb to know. No, I'm not saying that. Pretty soon what happens with the argument is the initial disagreement gets lost in the clouds because now we're going back and forth trying to clear up the misinterpretation of what I said, and then you got hurt or offended or felt put down because of the way I said it, and then I have to clarify that I didn't mean it that way, and pretty soon it's just one big mess. And the original disagreement is long gone, or at least buried underneath a whole bunch of minor disagreements because I said it in a certain way that you interpreted it, and then now I have to clarify the way you interpreted it, and when I clarify it, it leads to more misinterpretation. We've all had that experience, and I think if Joe and I would not have been separated by the break, that's what would have happened. Because, as he said, you're putting a child down. You're not supposed to put a child down. I know what he was alluding to. I made a comment that regularly in my office and oftentimes on the program here, people will preface what they're going to say about a child's conduct, attitude, behavior with, you know, but he's, I really got to say, he's really a good kid. He's just a good kid. Or in the office, they might say, I think I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. And I made the observation that one of the motives for saying that, that qualifier, is I don't want you to think I'm speaking ill of my child, or I don't want you to think ill of my child. So I'm going to preface it all with this, and then I'm going to go on to tell you what's wrong. That's very common. Happens a lot. I think Joe heard me not saying that the child was a good kid, but here's what he did wrong. He heard me saying, the child's not a good kid. Child's a bad kid. Which, by the way, just to raise a point here, sometimes the children don't act well a lot. And then what do you say? I get that in my office. The parents have a litany 9 miles long of how this kid is giving them all kinds of trouble and has given them all kinds of trouble for 9 years. And then they'll say, but I think he's a pretty good kid. And I will ask, how is that? Well, he's not on drugs or anything like that. He's not on drugs. It's the new moral high bar. All righty. Well, let me come back. I'm going to talk to Sharon from New York. No, I'm not. I'm going to hold that till after the break. I'm going to talk to another Sharon from Washington. She's getting mistreated. Who is mistreating her? What can she do about it? If anything.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord?
There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is, go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge them and to say, no, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What do we mean when we say to the Father, hallowed be thy name? We are recognizing the holiness of God. The Catechism tells us that the holiness of God is the inaccessible center of his eternal mystery. What is revealed of his holiness in history and nature is called by Scripture glory. When God made man in his image and likeness, he crowned man with glory and honor. But when man sinned, he fell short of the glory of God. From that time on, God manifested his holiness by revealing and giving his name, beginning with Moses, in order to restore man to the image of his Creator. Finally, in the person of Jesus, God's holy name is given to us in the flesh as Savior. He reveals this through his word and through his sacrifice. At the end of Jesus' passion, the Father gives to the Son the name that is above all names, Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, the only host of all of Catholic media that can take days off your purgatory, because I can be so irritating to listen to. And if you hang in there through the high level of irritation, the days taken off can mount up quickly. I better get to it because I don't have a whole lot of time in this segment. Sharon, Washington, rude grandsons. Who is doing this to you?
My 14-year-old grandson and now my 6-year-old grandson.
Well, wait a minute. Do you have leverage? I mean, if they do this to you, are their parents permitting it?
That's the problem. There's been a lot of drama in our family, and their mother has a brain injury and is sometime on board, sometimes I'm not. She's actually better at calling them on this than I am, because Grandma has done this for a while and allowed it to happen. And now I really need to reel it back because it's getting out of hand. I now live with my daughter and her children.
Grandma, why did you allow it to happen? I know why you allowed it to happen, but I'm going to ask you why.
I realize in something you said, it's the way I've been treated my whole life, is living with someone that rolls his eyes and is disgusted if I ask him to do anything, and I've just been accustomed to it.
I've grown accustomed to her tone.
Exactly.
You know what I would have thought, Sharon?
What?
This is where I missed it. I can't believe I missed it. I'm going to say this, and then you're going to tell me, well, Dr. Ray, no, you are right. I just didn't mention it. Okay. I would have thought, because of the trauma in their lives, you gave them extra allowance for being nasty.
That is very true.
Oh!
That's
oh!
Very true.
Sharon, I was scared there for a second.
Yeah,
I really was. I thought,
true.
I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed it. Nope. How could that be?
Nope, that's very true.
Well, if you live with them, are you allowed to discipline them?
Yes.
You said
only
something
when
interesting.
Your mother's not around.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even more interesting than what you said before.
Their mother does a pretty good job of it, but she's also into the, let's just talk them down, let's be nice, let's not,
Well,
I don't know. She
I would think
both ways.
Well, if she's doing that, if she's basically saying, let's work this out, let's talk together, and let's talk respect and talk nice and interface gently, then I would imagine it's getting better, right?
It's getting better for her. It's not getting better for me.
I'm surprised it's getting better for her. That surprised me. I, Okay. Well, that's good. That's
even
good.
Even with her brain injury, it is better for her. But the 14-year-old is very explosive and has high anxiety and PTSD. The 6-year-old has horrible anger issues and reaches out.
Oh, my gosh, Sharon. You know, you could be a look-back call in about 8 different days.
I know.
Because you have brought up so many ancillary issues here, anger issues. Boy, I hear that one all the time. And he doesn't have anger issues. He has frustration issues most of the time is what kids have.
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's deal with you. Then I'll save all the rest of this stuff for looking back.
Okay.
You have set up the terms of the relationship. You can treat Grandma this way. You can talk to her any way you want. You can argue with her. You can yell at her. Whatever it is, you can do this to Grandma. Will you be allowed to sit down with Mom and say, can I do some things to stop this? Can I put at least a price tag on it so they control themselves somewhat when they talk to me that way? Will she let you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Great.
I've let them do that because I felt they needed some place to release their steam on somebody that they knew would love them regardless.
Oh, Sharon, that's just so totally ridiculous. I can't believe it. Oh, sorry, Sharon. I'm just releasing my steam. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you just raised another issue, the old cathartic issue. Oh, gosh, Sharon. You'll be a whole look back day. Which one do I pick? Let's start with the most recent one. One of the reasons that parents, and in this case a grandparent, allows a lot of disrespect is the notion, and again, going back to my manologue, that the experts promulgate, which is children need to express themselves. You don't want an automaton Stepford child who essentially keeps all of his feelings and his emotions and his thoughts to himself because it's disrespectful to dispute you. It's disrespectful to give his perspective. No, what you don't want is nastiness in expressing his opinion. I don't know of any parent or grandparent when a kid says, you know, Grandma, I do not understand why you don't allow me to do that. That just makes no sense to me. Nobody's going to say that's disrespectful attitude. They're going to say, hey, he's expressing something that deserves an answer. What is happening here is that Grandma for years has allowed them to emote, has allowed them to cathart, get off these feelings, this frustration aimed at her because she thought, well, good, let's get it out of their system. And what she found out is a truth. When anyone, and this includes any adult too, gets into the habit of expressing themselves in any manner, I tell it like it is. You're going to know how I think. I don't mince words. All of which all too often is a way of saying I can get nasty. When that happens, it becomes a style. It becomes the default response. When I'm frustrated with you, you're going to know about it. And you're going to know about it in a way that is none too pleasant. That isn't expressing feelings. That's expressing nastiness. She said something that typically is a top reason for parents bringing in their frustration over a child. She said the 6-year-old has anger issues. So commonly, a parent will say, I'm worried about this child because he gets angry. He seems angry. He's trip switch. He goes off so easily. You can't even predict when he's going to go off. That is often a sign of discipline problems. Because the parent, in this case, the grandparent, is frustrated at handling this child. There's a lot of bickering, there's a lot of arguing, there's a lot of negotiation, and it usually ends up in conflict, and the kid is getting progressively more agitated whenever he's confronted with limits, expectations, or consequences. So instead of taking them without a brawl, without a fight, If he is told, go to your room, go sit down, whatever it is, he erupts. And the adult is thinking, wow, he's gone crazy over something so little. He must have major anger issues. Not necessarily. He may just be learning, I don't like what you're doing, and we fight about it, and I really don't respect your authority because you fight with me too much, as opposed to simply asserting your authority before we get ugly with each other. Oh, there were other ones too there, but as I said, the heartbreak rules the program. When we come back, Sharon from New York has a concern about a no fight or flight response.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The EWTN home video highlight for November is The Case for Jesus. EWTN's Noah Lett and Professor Brant Petrie answer the biblical and historical questions that scholars have pondered for more than 100 years. Order your DVD and companion book at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
He always starts with the good things. You know, the seven letters to the churches and the book of Revelation is a great way to write letters to other people, by the way, or to have conversations with other people. You start with what's going well. You do this, this, and this really well. I love it. Thank you. Here's what you're lacking. And I think for many of us as men, what the Lord's communicating at that second part of the letter or the second part of the conversation is, here's what we're lacking. You don't ever spend enough time with me. You have no idea what I'm trying to offer you in the gift of my friendship. Or if you do, you don't make time for it. And if you would but come to me, I would change your life like that. But you don't come. Not with the regularity that I want you to come. Not with the ardor and the fervor and the passion that I want you to come. I have a hunch, more than a hunch, that's what he says to me. And I got a hunch that's what he would say to many of us.
Dr. Ray Guarini, thank you for joining me, a warrior against psychological correctness. This is Look Back Friday. It is the Friday version of The Doctor Is In, which comes to you Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, the TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray. We will be putting out some information. We will be doing some more tapings in early November. So we'll be putting out the details on that here locally in the Living Bread radio listening area. And even somewhat within the Rock listening area up in the Cleveland area. We tape in North Canton at Walsh University, so we'll get that information out. It should be up on the website here shortly if it's not up already. Sharon from New York she's worried. She doesn't see a fight or flight, and we'll explain that, response in a teen girl. She's put it this way. Her daughter doesn't seem to have a fight or flight mechanism. Now, that's an interesting way to put it. But most people would say amotivated, flat. Now, how'd you come to that conclusion?
Several reasons. She, for different reasons. The biggest one was we had a fire at our home. And as I'm running through the house screaming fire and to get out, she just sat on the couch and continued to watch TV. I had to physically pull her off the couch and force her out of the house. She just was like, didn't think there was a big deal. It was nothing. She did not respond to it when everybody else was, you know, crazy. She didn't respond to that.
Is that
it also extends to like internet stuff.
What do you mean by that, internet stuff?
She does not have a cell phone. We don't allow her on the computer. You know, we try to keep her away from it as much as we can possibly do that, changing passwords and keeping an eye on it. But she still, she'll borrow friends' phones when she's at school and she goes online. And people tell me things, you know, weird people that she's talking to that are saying things that any normal person would be concerned about and, you know, basically say, okay, block, leave this person, don't talk to this person. And she just doesn't have that. She doesn't, no red flags. She doesn't respond to, you know, what normal people feel is danger, you know. Danger Will Robinson, you know. She needs a robot.
Yeah, you're tapping into my age there. Watch it. Okay. Well, first of all, we don't know that. You put it well when you said, she really didn't take me serious when I was running through the house screaming, fire, 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 and she looked at me like, hey, Mom, chill, would you? I'm watching TV. So my more quick interpretation would be she just didn't take you serious. If there truly was a fire in that front room, she'd be out of there, all right? She's not going to sit there and say, I have no fight or flight response. I'll wait until the flames get within about 6 inches of my feet before I move. Now, you don't actually think that would happen, do you?
Well, I hope not.
Well, yeah, I hope.
It seems like it would take something much more serious and close to get a reaction from her.
Well, the fact that she doesn't get upset over what is posted or what is said or on social media, and you said basically we don't give her this stuff, but she sneaks it, tells me that she wants this stuff, okay? And the idea that...
She does. Yep.
Okay, and the idea that, well, I don't block people, I don't get shook up with what they say. To me, the interpretation, the more likely one, would be that she is so into this stuff and she so much wants to get it and get around you and get it that no matter what happens on there, she's going to immerse herself in it. So what you in your moral system would say, gee, I want no part of this. She says, I don't see any problem with it. Okay. I think
that's exactly it.
And there's good news, bad news. The good news is the likelihood that your daughter has some deficient mechanism for self-preservation, oftentimes called the flight or flight response, is very low. It's just very, very low, okay? Because you could probably see that in other aspects of her life. The bad news is that it sounds like there may be some socialization, moralization going on underneath your radar that you don't know is happening, and that her view of it is, hey, Mom, you're so out of touch. You know, Mom, even when you yell fire, you don't, forget it, Mom. I don't really take you serious, okay? Mom, you're just out of control, hyper, Mom. So just chill, would you? I think that'd be my guess as to what's going on, which means you're going to probably have to be a little more aware of where and how and whom and what she's getting into. Years ago, I was listening to a radio show, and they were talking about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The mother called in and said she suspected this as a neurological condition in her 4-year-old. The host asked, why? Mom said, well, when he is in front of the TV, I can call his name, no response. I can attempt to get his attention. He seems riveted, locked into the images on that TV. The professional listening to this said, yeah, that's definitely one sign of attention deficit. I remember thinking, whoa, wait a minute. First of all, given the flickering images that occur on kids' TV, designed to grab their attention and hold it, or given the flickering images on a video game, some kind of computer game, it doesn't shock me at all that these kids are locked into what they're doing for the moment. and outside stimulation just doesn't seem to register. That is a common phenomenon, very common. And if we say, well, obviously there's like in this case, Sharon said no fight or flight. In other words, my daughter didn't react like a normal human would. Then she took it further and she said it didn't register with her that the things these people are saying to her in her computer messages or her text messages or however it is that she's technologically communicating with them. I, as her parent, see all kinds of problems with this. Stay away from these folks. Don't even communicate with them. And the daughter's saying, what? What? And again, Sharon interpreted that as, why doesn't she react? I don't think it's an absence of a neurological protective device. It sounds more like it's an absence of, I don't see a problem with it. I kind of like it. I think the bigger question here for Sharon is, what is her daughter getting into? And how much was she allowed to get into it before Sharon decided, I need to literally pull the plug on some of this stuff because she can't handle it. It's pulling her in. Listening to I think she was a neurologist, talking about the immaturity of adolescents' brains, and that some research coming out that is indicating that the ability to delay gratification, to make good judgments, to control impulses, really starts to stabilize somewhere in the 20s all the way up to 30. And a 14, 15, 16-year-old just doesn't necessarily have the brain matter to cope with a lot of the situations that modern technological society is throwing at them. I think this is a case, and it's a case that's very common to a lot of parents, which is mom and dad initially thought there was no problem with access to the computer, access to a smartphone, access to certain video games, access to playing group video games. They assumed that the child would have enough maturity, in this case, Sharon, would have enough fight or flight response to recognize the good stuff and separate it from the bad stuff. And a lot of kids get pulled in because it overwhelms their judgment. It overwhelms their moral sense. And parents are forced to readjust. And that's when the problem kicks in, because it has already been allowed up to a certain point. And when the parent says, I realize I miscalculated here. I thought you could handle these things. You're becoming almost addicted to them. They're becoming the center of your life. This phone is your world. It has overwhelmed your ability to be balanced about this. And then, and rightfully so, the parent has to say, okay, I'm readjusting. And that's when they have to brace themselves for an intense resistance reaction. And my guess here with Sharon is that that's coming. This is Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Thank you for calling.
New from EWTN Publishing, and just in time for Christmas, it's The Spiritual Wisdom of Mother Angelica. This 7-book box set includes Mother's Quick Guide to the Sacraments, Mother on Christ and Our Lady, her Guide to Practical Holiness, and, of course, Praying with Mother Angelica, and more. The Spiritual Wisdom of Mother Angelica, available now at EWTNRC.com.
The Doctor Is In is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical, and in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
How do I handle difficult family members? When do I correct others? When do I hold my tongue? Too often, we're late in realizing that we mishandle a situation, causing both resentment and frustration. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. And in my new book, Thinking Like Jesus, I tackle these questions and more. Check it out and more of my books at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Some years back, one of my kids got me those mugs, those coffee mugs, world's greatest dad. I live in fear that the rightful owner of that mug is going to show up to claim it. Every time I use it for coffee, I'm looking around going, I wonder if the world's greatest dad is going to show up and grab this thing. Dr. Ray Guarendi, don't have enough time to do another look back call, so, as we sometimes do, take a quote from C.S. Lewis, see what we can get out of it. This is from his book, Letters to an American Lady. May God's grace give you the necessary humility. Try not to think, much less speak, of their sins. One's own sins are a much more profitable theme. In other words, you can do a lot more self-improvement if you're aware of your own sins. And if on consideration one can find no faults on one's own side, then cry for mercy. For this must be a most dangerous delusion. I've heard priests say that they have had folks come into the confessional and have nothing to tell them. Now, there's one of two explanations for that. One, these are walking saints with no sinfulness whatsoever in their daily lives. Or they just flat out don't look at themselves. From a psychological perspective, I'm pretty much leaning heavily on the latter. Lewis says, if you don't think you have no sinfulness, no faults, then you're living a delusion. Maybe this could help us. If we are tempted to say in our marriage, in our parenthood, our relations at work, wherever it might be, if we're tempted to say, well, I really don't think I do anything wrong. I think I'm the good one. I think I'm the easy one. I think I'm the nice one. I think I'm the more mature one. Use that as an indication to say to yourself, I need to look at me a little more closely. Because if I think that in some way I am clearly superior, morality-wise or personally-wise, then let me look at myself. Let me see a little more closely. Let me scrutinize a little bit more what's inside me. Because it's real easy for me to protect myself. In defense of the ego, I've got a lot of psychological ability to more or less say, that's not me. I don't do that. I'm not like that at all. I'm pretty nice. I'm a good guy. Clock is saying I got to stop being a good guy. I thank Andrew Krucek for all the editing he has done on those look back calls. And I thank you for your kind attention, or even if it wasn't kind, or you weren't attentive, whatever it is. Thank you for the company. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, E-Person Monday, coming up, God willing, after the weekend. Walk with God. You got children. Hold them tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.